behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
Ben, today we have another, I guess what we'll call a question of the day. That's what we call it around here at How
yeah.
Stuff Works, right?
Yeah.
And it comes from an article that was written by Marshall Brain, our founder,
mm-hmm.
from a long, long time ago, way, way, way back in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, like 6 years ago at this point. This is a question that, I don't know, maybe you kind of pondered this a little bit, maybe you haven't.
Okay.
It seems to be the only one online with this title, which is kind of interesting. I figured no one else has really covered it since then. So let's talk about Marshall's article.
Yeah.
The title is, what if I put a 1-horsepower engine into my car?
Yeah.
And we have been recently talking a lot about what manufacturers have been doing to improve their fuel economy,
mm-hmm.
right? We've talked about, aerodynamics, and we talked about replacing the exterior mirrors with cameras. We've talked about low rolling resistance tires.
Sure.
We've talked about smaller engines, but never quite this small.
Yeah, and this is so small that it could be on the level of a thought experiment.
Yeah.
So what we'll do right now is we'll talk about this idea of a horsepower thing. But first, Scott, before we get to what horsepower is and what a 1-horsepower engine would mean, there's a segment of the article that you thought we should really get to, and read for the audience.
Yeah,
right?
I think it just is, it's a nice lead into this whole conversation. And this will give you kind of the idea of what we're thinking about here. And it comes right from the article, and it's very short. I'll just read it quickly. A typical car in America has something around a 120 horsepower engine. A big SUV might have, a 200 horsepower engine. And you know what, Ben? Since 2008, we're seeing these numbers go up, up, up. So these are from 2008. And a tiny car might only have something like a 70 horsepower engine. Now, moped, on the other hand, has something like, a 1 or 2 or 3 horsepower engine, and it gets great gas mileage, like 70 or 80 miles per gallon or even more. A lot of times we're seeing them, closer to 100, really.
Yeah.
So why not put a little engine in a car and give it a mileage boost? So the idea is that you back it down as far as you possibly can, which is what manufacturers are really doing now.
Right. That's
but,
true.
But the idea that Marshall had here and the question was, why don't you back it all the way down, go all the way down to 1 horsepower? So we're talking like a single cylinder, 1-horsepower engine in a vehicle, something that would have to be, designed a little differently, obviously.
Yeah.
But would this work? Is it possible? And that's kind of the thing that the point that we get to here is that it would be such a dramatic restyling of the vehicle.
Yeah.
One thing I want to point out, Ben.
Yeah.
Think all the way back to when we talked about, remember the buckboard cars we talked about?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
The cars like the Smith Flyer. If you haven't ever seen a Smith Flyer, take a look online, just keyword search.
Do yourself a favor.
Yeah. Smith Flyer, buckboard car. Mm-hmm. You're going to find a photo that is an actual car that was sold the 20th century. And it was a car that had something like that had a 2-horsepower engine.
Yeah.
That was a Briggs & Stratton engine, and that was probably way, way underpowered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it was a fast car by any means, but that had 2-horsepower, and you'll see what it's like. It's almost like a toboggan with wheels and a steering wheel and 2 seats.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like. It's a flat board car. It's really it's amazing to think that was 2 horsepower. And then like my lawnmower now, Ben.
Yeah,
that is 4 horsepower, and that's just a push mower.
Your lawnmower is a beast.
Yeah, that's right. And I had a garden tractor that had like a 16-horsepower engine, which was really not anything great. I mean, that's enough to get around the yard and pull a stump out if I needed to, maybe.
Okay, I think I see where you're going with this, Scott. It's how do we make this horsepower measurement understandable? Earlier, you and I did an episode on horsepower versus torque, right?
I remember that one.
And we were treading lightly there because we don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot, right? But we think there's a really great opportunity for anybody who wants to learn more to check out that previous episode if you haven't yet. Just a bit of background. Horsepower, was a term invented by an engineer named James Watt. And this is a deep cut because Watt lived from 1736 to 1819. His primary claim to fame is improving steam engines. He's also the reason that he came up with a lot of measurements, not just horsepower. Like, he's the reason we measure light bulbs in wattage, James Watt. So He started sort of an arbitrary measurement, right? Today we think 1 horsepower is equivalent to 33,000 foot-pounds per minute, which sounds like a lot. But now our question is, would that work in a car?
Yeah. Now picture this. Now I've got a small compact hatchback.
Okay.
I mean, a Civic Si.
Yeah.
And it's from 2005. It's not overly powerful or anything like that, but it is an Si. It's got a little more horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know the amount, maybe like 160 or something like that, or even less.
Okay.
So that's quite a bit, really, when you think about it. I mean, for the size of the vehicle and everything, but if you back that down to 1 horsepower, would it really work? I mean, we're talking about taking away 162 horsepower away. I don't think that's going to work. And the reason is because it's such a big vehicle. It's not designed to work with a 1 horsepower engine.
Right.
Now, if you did design a car to work with a 1 horsepower engine, you're going to have to design it almost like, those eco-fueler type vehicles or eco-challenge vehicles that we see.
Right. Yeah. Like when you see a specialty racing challenges where they have a solar powered vehicle or mini car of some sort.
Yeah, they have knife edge wheels that barely touch the ground. I mean, and they're rock hard wheels.
Very narrow form factor.
Exactly.
And little rolling resistance. And these are all one seaters, by the way. Yeah. I don't think you could make a two seater.
No, I don't think so either. And they're extremely aerodynamic. But, the point is that, the car is the way it's designed. You couldn't just drop it into an existing vehicle and expect it to work.
Right. And one thing people don't consider also is that even if the weight were not the primary problem, which it is, the auxiliary systems place a demand on the engine that a 1 horsepower just couldn't handle.
Exactly. It. Yeah. I mean, like the headlights, the radio.
AC.
AC is a big one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I'm glad you mentioned AC because that drags quite a bit. And you can test this out yourself. A lot of cars, I mean, older cars, even like my car, you're driving down the road and you hit the AC button. Mm-hmm. And you can feel a drop in power. I mean, you can feel it slowly, like it's weighing on the engine. You can tell it
drops just a bit.
Exactly. And, I mean, something like a 1 horsepower engine, it couldn't maintain a speed even because it takes something like 10 to 20 horsepower simply to maintain speed
at
60 miles per hour. And that's with, wind resistance and rolling resistance, because rolling resistance is big in every vehicle, really. And that all depends on the surface of the road and the pressure in the tires and the compound of the tires and all this information that comes together to tell us that, it takes about 10 to 20 horsepower to just simply maintain speed. And, I'm going to have some numbers for you in just a minute that are dramatically different, but, it couldn't accelerate. Yeah, you couldn't pull out into traffic. I mean, think about it. If you had a 1 horsepower engine in your car right now, you would step on the gas and absolutely nothing would happen. You'd hear the engine rev up and it would be straining to go, but it wouldn't roll it. Now, I was trying to think of how I could, convey this a little better, but have you ever tried to push a car, even on a flat surface, just push a car that is completely stalled, but it's in neutral?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's very hard, isn't it?
It's weighty.
It is. I mean, even a small car is difficult to roll sometimes. A bigger car, of course, it gets harder and harder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, a 1 horsepower engine, just imagine how futile that would be in order to, pushing the gas, trying to get that thing to even begin rolling in a car.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to have some type of system set up where, something would get you going. And then you'd be able to maintain speed at a lower, with a smaller engine.
So it'd be more like an engine assist.
I
kind
guess.
Of thing, or a hybrid vehicle of some sort.
That kind of gets to the hybrid thing. And that, you know what?
What?
I'm glad you said hybrid because, you just sparked a memory. And you know what? Let's make that our last thing that we talk about.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay.
All right.
There's something interesting with hybrids that I want to talk about. But, I do have a better example maybe. One more quick thing. We talked about being able to pull out into traffic and being able to.
Oh, yeah. What if you're at a red light, for instance?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You couldn't go. I mean, what about passing? You couldn't pass anybody.
No.
I mean, because you're not going to gain speed rapidly on anybody if you do eventually get rolling. Also hills. There's no way you could start on a hill.
Yeah.
Maybe even climbing a hill would be impossible because you would just continually lose speed until you eventually stop and then maybe even roll backwards. I mean,
you couldn't carry anything because any of the weight that you would accrue from that would be difficult. Let's see, another huge disadvantage. I can't remember if we talked about it. One thing that high horsepower translates directly to is acceleration.
Yeah.
And so if you have a 1 horsepower vehicle, that means you have cartoonishly bad acceleration. So you there's no way you could get on a highway because literally you don't have enough time on the merge ramp to get to 60 miles. It'll take you several minutes, right?
Several minutes, and that's if you can get it rolling and if you can get it up to that speed. It all depends on...
It's not windy.
It all depends on the shape of the vehicle, and again, the tires and all of that, the road surface, everything has to play into this to make it work. So it's just really just something that's just not possible. I mean, it really does require, I mean, for the average car...
Yeah.
You're talking about maybe at minimum, you're talking about like maybe 60 to 70 horsepower is what you need in order to keep these things going. And that's with everything that we have to have, you know, the ABS systems.
Right.
And the airbags and, you know, the, I don't know, all the different systems you have to have in place, like the roll cage that's built in within the structure and the, all the crumple zones and everything, you know, the size of the vehicle that we have to have now as far as federal mandates go. And, that's pretty much, it's not just the United States. It's also standard elsewhere as well.
Yeah, even outside of the United States, because, you know, we've talked for a time about how there are legal requirements in the U.S. and a lot of Western countries that necessitate certain weight classes. But even in places where those sorts of regulations don't exist, like in India, the Tata Nano, the world's cheapest new car, also doesn't have a one horsepower engine, and they would make it that way if they thought they could get away with it or lower the price.
Well, they absolutely would. They have a very small engine. And I don't off the cuff here. I don't have the numbers.
It's not one horsepower though.
It's not one horsepower. It's significantly more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for a bare bones, you know, no frills vehicle.
That would be illegal in the U.S.
Illegal in the U.S. That's right. And you know what? This is reminding me, Ben, a little bit of when we talked about, hypercars. You remember a long time ago?
Yeah.
And that was kind of, the kick, you know, that we were on was hypercar kick, you know,
because
it was
the hypermiling lifestyle.
It's such a cool thing, you know, not so much the hypermiling, but the hypercars, you know, that they were super light and they would get like 200 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was you could create these fantastically designed vehicles that were safe, that were lightweight, but they just wouldn't pass federal regulations. They wouldn't be allowed on regular roads.
Right. Yeah.
And there was places that were building them. I think it was the Rocky Mountain Institute was building them.
Mm-hmm. Good memory.
Lovins, I think was the guy's name.
I can't remember. I'm blanking on his name.
I think that was his name. The professor that was working on these things.
We've got the episode though, and there's some fantastic science in
and
there.
And he actually built a couple of these things as far as for test vehicles that actually worked. And you know, one more thing, Ben.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I want to talk about some dramatically different numbers here too. But, I was just thinking that, you know, who'd be a big fan of something like this? Now, I know that speed was more his thing.
Okay.
Colin Chapman, the founder of Lotus, would love lightweight small cars because that was his whole game. I mean, remember through Formula One and cars that we see now from Lotus are extremely lightweight.
Trim the weight up the power.
They have a lot of horsepower, but I mean, they get by with less horsepower because they're so well designed. They're so efficient in their design.
It's like frozen water
and still legal. That's
the
thing.
They're still street legal.
So, that's the amazing part. But if you read about Colin Chapman and some of his ideas, now I know that he wouldn't be for a one horsepower car, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But you make a lightweight car with an engine that is strong enough to really get it going fast and make it fun.
Yeah.
Then he's on board, I'm sure. Or he would have been on board, I should say.
You know what? I know that I've been dropping different podcast episodes that we've done throughout this thing, but the Colin Chapman story is amazing. And I'd really like people to listen to that. If you're just driving and you're in traffic or you're going to be on the road for a while, just treat some of our historical stories kind of like audiobooks.
Because
God knows that Preston Tucker one is long enough to be an audiobook.
It probably is. But you know what? I agree with you completely because the Colin Chapman story and the Lotus story, they're pretty fascinating. We dug up a lot of good information about him, and it's just he was a fascinating character. And I'd like to go back and listen to that one myself now that I think about it.
And speaking of good stories, this is why I bring this up to you, Scott. Just before we went on air, I told you that I am doing something I don't usually do, which is taking a vacation. Probably the first one in several years for me.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. Otherwise, I just—it's kind of a joke around here at the office that toward the end of the year, I start using my vacation by the hours because I'm so cheap that I want to take the vacation time. So I don't want to lose it. So I'll take like a 1 or 2 hour finger quote vacation.
Yeah. Which you, just go down to your car and take a nap?
I've done that before.
Yeah. Well, whatever it takes, I guess.
Thanks.
You don't use it, you lose it, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so my girlfriend put her foot down, and we're going to take a vacation. We're going to go some place off the coast or off the Gulf. And while we're going down there, I realized that one of the things I'm most excited about is the drive. I love a good drive, you know, and sometimes I'll just hop in my car and drive for a few hours anyway. Mm-hmm. But now we're going to be driving. I think the trip time will be pretty significant, but gives me a chance to ask you for some advice. Scott, the radio is not going to cut it. You got any audiobooks for me?
I do. I have a fantastic audiobook for you. It comes from audible.com and it's called The Car Thief, and it's written by Theodore Wiesner, and it's about 12 hours and 33 minutes long. And this book, I mean, it's called The Car Thief. It's an older novel, actually. It was published in 1972. So that was 42 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Recently brought to the into audio form, I guess. And the narrative itself, the story itself is set in 1959. And just to give you the quick summary of this whole thing. It's about 16-year-old Alex Hausman, who has just stolen his 14th car. And frankly, he doesn't know why he did it. Now he's got parents that are divorced, working class father who grinds out the night shift at the local Chevy plant in Detroit and looks forward to the flask in his glove compartment and the open bottles of booze in his Flint, Michigan home. Mm-hmm. So you can tell right away that this is going to be kind of a, I don't know, maybe a bleak story, I suppose.
Sure. Gritty.
Yeah, a little more gritty, I guess. So it says, broke and fighting to survive, Alex and his father face the realities of estrangement, incarceration, and even violence in their lives. As their lives unfold towards a climactic episode that the New York Times reviewer called one of the most profoundly powerful in American fiction. Now, this is a book that's been around a long, long time.
Okay.
And I started to kind of dig into this one. I haven't ever read The Car Thief, but I looked into it, and the people that reviewed it said this is such a poignant and well-written book that they feel that it should be taught at every high school across the world, really. I mean, this is such a good, like, coming-of-age story. It has, you know, the angle of like the teenage angst, and the main character is, you know, the classic anti-hero in this whole thing.
Rebel without a cause.
It's kind of a meandering story, but it's, if you think back to high school and you think about some of the real classic novels that you read, like the ones that everybody read and everybody has a pretty good grasp on. This is one that a lot of people say this should be taught in high schools.
Okay, well, I am sold.
Yeah, I am too. I think this is one to want to check out.
And if you are listening to this and you think, hey, I'd like to check out The Car Thief, I don't want to read the book, I'd rather listen to it, but I don't want to pay for an audiobook, we have good news for you. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/carstuff and get a free audiobook download of your choice just because you hang out with us on the air. You know, they'll be like, oh, you know, Scott and Ben, you're good people. Have a free book. It doesn't have to be The Car Thief. It can be one of, what, hundreds of thousands?
Yeah, literally hundreds of thousands of titles.
Mm-hmm. And that's everything from true crime, which I know is one of your favorite genres, Scott, to sci-fi, fantasy, nonfiction, how-to, self-help, and more. Check it out. Let us know what you think and tell them Scott and Ben sent you.
That's it. Yeah. And this is it's an American classic. It's like, this is a great father son tale. I think a lot of people would really, really like this. So, you know, it's got a little bit of the blue collar thing in there. And you mentioned gritty kind of, meandering story, but definitely one worth checking out. So check it out.
And, now it's time to check out a little bit more about the one horsepower car idea.
Yeah. But you know what? I want to go somewhere completely different now that we've gotten past the break here. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. So I told you I was going to tell you about some completely different numbers. And, I have two dramatically different examples to share with you. The first one I'm going to share with you, believe it or not, Ben, comes from our Bugatti Veyron podcast. Now, again, another podcast that we have in our past, because we're getting to the point where we've covered a lot of stuff.
Arguably, this is one of the fastest cars in the world.
It is. Yes, that's right. In fact, well, up until, you know what? Up until February of this year, which I just read about the Venom GT. So, that just topped the Veyron. But anyways, the Bugatti Veyron, the lesson in horsepower that we learned from the Bugatti Veyron was this, that, and it was through the Top Gear test that, you know, when they drove at top speed on the track in Germany.
Yeah, and it tops out at 280 something.
No. It's, I think it's 257 or something. 253. Is what it topped out at least at the time it did. Now, it may have bumped up by this point, but getting the Veyron to do 155 miles per hour isn't really all that hard, apparently. And this is kind of where we were going with, like, you know, the smaller cars have more than enough horsepower. I mean,
right.
Even my car has like 163 horsepower, something like that. And it gets up there pretty good. Not Veyron speed, obviously, but here's why. Now, the Veyron getting to do 155 isn't really all that difficult. It needs 270 horsepower to get up to 155 miles per hour. So it would do with 270 horsepower. And you know how slick that car is, and you know what it looks like.
Yep.
It's cutting through the air very, very efficiently. It's a very efficient package.
Very little drag.
Exactly, yeah. Now, to get up to its top speed, which is 253 miles per hour, or it was at the time. Ben.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I was thinking of horsepower.
Oh, that's okay. It gets up to 253, to get up to 253 miles per hour, it needs another 730 horsepower to do that. So that second 100 miles per hour is where you require all of that horsepower. And the reason is because you're fighting what they call Mother Nature. I mean, obviously that's rolling resistance, that's wind resistance, and all of that just gets incrementally more difficult as you get faster and faster and faster. So the more you push, the more it pushes back. And there's this give and take that happens all the way. And that's why it requires 1,001 horsepower in order for this thing to get up to 253 miles per hour. So, you know, to get up to a simple 155, which most of our cars on the road will do now.
Yeah.
I mean, most. I don't think all of them. Some are limited to like 130, somewhere around there. But it really doesn't require that much. 270, that's a little more than average, but not much more than average.
So, what would be the way to say this? Are we running into sort of a law of diminishing returns?
I think we are because, you know, you're talking about a 16 cylinder engine with four turbos. It creates a lot of heat, so this thing has 10 radiators.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the opposite end of the spectrum here. We're talking about a one horsepower car. That's going to create a lot of heat just because it's going to be struggling against all that weight. It's going to be putting forth a lot of effort and really getting no results. And there's going to be no cooling wind coming over that thing at all. Mm-hmm. You're going to be relying completely on a liquid cooling system.
Yeah.
And Ben, the one horsepower car thing is a complete myth. It just can't happen.
Well, not with orthodox technology. Now, and it also depends clearly on one's definition of a car.
Okay.
We've run into this before. Yeah. I think when we did some micro car stuff and some three wheel car stuff, we both said, well, at what point?
Yeah. Is it a three wheel motorcycle or is it a
tadpole? Yeah. Now, that's why I went on a search for the possibility of some one horsepower vehicles, some legit one horsepower cars.
Really?
Yep.
What'd you find?
Not much, but I did find a very, I'm just being honest with you.
Yeah.
But I did find a very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal about a fellow named Rob Cotter. He's once upon a time, he was a performance engineer and tuner with Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, and BMW. So he has a kind of a passion project. Now he is the founder and CEO of a company in North Carolina called Organic Transit, and they make a little something called the Elf. This is weird. I'm going to tell you what this is and then show you the picture, okay?
Okay.
Kind of a tadpole design. It's an ovoid, semi-enclosed, solar chargeable, plug-in electric pedal car.
An ovoid? Oh, it looks like an egg, right?
Yeah. You know those. It's got a one horsepower electric motor.
One horsepower. No
750 watt, named after our buddy James Watt. It's in the rear wheel hub, and it also has a lithium battery pack. Here's what I mean. You remember, how sometimes when you go to a grocery store, depending on which grocery store you go to, there's some of those custom-made kid carts.
I do.
And they have, like, the little mini yellow and orange kid car thing.
Sure, they look like a plastic NASCAR car or something. The kid drives as a mom drives around or dad drives around and walks around and gets the groceries.
Yeah, here's a little picture of the elf.
Oh boy, that definitely looks like
it looks exactly like it.
Like a kid shopping car. I don't know what to call that. What do you call those things?
A cart car?
Yeah, cart car. That's a good way to say it.
So there you could be as a grown man.
What's the name of that again so people can
elf.
Look it up?
It's the Elf by Organic Transit. I'm not going to be dismissive because I think it's a smart design. It's supposed to be for urban commuters who want to leave the car at home, but don't want to have to deal with a regular bicycle.
Yeah, or rain.
Yeah, so it is semi-enclosed. So it's sort of between a bicycle and a car.
Yeah.
it's legal, but it's legal for bike lanes.
Oh, I see.
Not for the street.
So it must be very narrow. And it looks like you're not going to be taking that thing out in snow or ice.
No, no, no. The wheels are closer to bike wheels than they would be to car wheels. It costs just under $5,000.
That's a bargain.
That's a bargain. And it only weighs – oh, it can carry 350 pounds. Top speed is 20 miles per hour. It's got a range of around 30 miles. So, again, is this more of a bike than it is a car? I would say yes.
If it's only allowed to be used in bike lanes?
Okay, I would say I said yes.
Okay. It's a $5,000 bike.
It has a one-horsepower engine, though. And look, man, I looked around to try to find a one-horsepower engine that wasn't in, you know, a lawnmower from the 70s.
I understand. Yeah. Besides a go-kart or something like that. Something that's actually being called a vehicle that you could drive on the road. You could ride on the road, whatever.
And there, according to, what people say, the response to these vehicles is pretty good. People, it's getting good reviews. They like it. So if that's something that's right for you, go ahead and check it out. You know, you and I have done some extensive shows on, this sort of mix of alternative vehicles coming out. Primarily for people dwelling in urban environments. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see what the rural environments have to offer in a future episode.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I think they're more still stuck at the pickup trucks and things, off-road vehicles, things like that.
Right. Well, what –
Well, that not really being stuck with it because those are great options. But
yeah.
But you know what? I was digging around as well, and I'm impressed that you found that one-horsepower vehicle because I couldn't find a single thing that was considered a vehicle other than like a scooter or something like that
right.
had one horsepower.
Yeah.
But I did find something that was something that we had talked about a long time ago, and I was just curious about this because, you know, we're talking about one horsepower being able to power just any vehicle that you drop a one horsepower engine into, right?
Like, right.
Let's say you have an old Geo Metro and you want to try this out as an experiment, right? And I could see somebody actually trying it but, you know, not getting anywhere with it. Well, I was thinking, what's an efficient car that probably has a really small engine that, you know, is sort of along this line? And the best I could think of, or actually not the best, but the one that came to mind immediately was that Volkswagen 1 liter car.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I both love that car. I think it's really, really cool.
I think it's super smart.
And they actually have a production version of this for the people that don't know now. There's a production version that's being sold right now in Europe. Not coming to the United States. I don't know where else it's going. You know, if it'll make its way to
maybe the Asia market or something.
Could be. Maybe. I'm not sure. It's very limited production, but it is currently on sale in Europe right now. It's called the XL1, and it's a diesel-powered plug-in hybrid. And that's the version they went with for the final production. And I believe it gets something like 138 miles per gallon is the equivalent that this thing gets. Now, I said it's a plug-in hybrid, so you know it does use diesel power, a very small diesel-powered engine, and that's what I was interested in.
Yeah.
Now the size of this thing is a 0.8 liter, so zero, not even 1 liter, direct injection, 2-cylinder turbocharged diesel engine, which puts out, Ben, get this, 48 horsepower.
Wow.
And that tells you something because this is a pretty bare bones car. I mean, it's 2-seater. It's very, very lightweight. I mean, it's very aerodynamic as well. I think the coefficient of drag is something like 0.19.
Not bad
at all. It weighs 1,750 pounds, which that's a little heavy. I think the first Miatas were something about that range. You know, about 1750. Not anymore, but they used to be. And so this tiny, tiny diesel engine was about the closest I could come. And I was thinking, what's the horsepower in this? Why, you know, what does it require in order to get out into traffic and to be able to operate and function?
Yeah.
48 horsepower is what that engine puts out. Now, you got to combine that, though, with the electric motor assist because they went with the hybrid. And that puts out an additional 27 horsepower.
Okay.
So the combined is something like 75, although they claim that combined, it's less. It's not like one on top of the other. It's like not like 48 plus 27, which is 75.
It's more like an overlap.
Yeah, they call it 68 horsepower.
Huh.
So they say 68 horsepower is what this thing needs in order to operate and function and be able to drive and pass and you know, get up hills and be able to merge with traffic and, you know, just to be out and to function like a car. So 48 horsepower, or rather 68 horsepower, is kind of the minimum on something like this because they didn't want to go outlandishly fast with it or anything like that. It's just really about efficiency, and that's what we're talking about with this article is efficiency. Now, the price for this is pretty expensive. In euros, it's 111,000 euros, which means in U.S. dollars, $153,000 is what you're going to pay for this vehicle.
Not me.
No, not me either. And but I do like it. And we talked about it, and we said if it ever came to the United States, you know, as a feasible working vehicle,
right,
something that
yeah.
functioned, you and I would both be in line for one of these vehicles because they're pretty cool. And they used to have the tandem seating, and I don't think they do anymore.
No. Oh, well.
So they changed a few different things around from the original prototype. But we're looking at about, you know, again, mid-60s horsepower for an extremely well-designed, lightweight, efficient, smooth, you know, car to be able to just to be able to function in traffic.
But they're fantastic vehicles. If they weren't 150 grand, I'd get one. But we never, one thing that still makes me think about that episode we did, it was we never pinned down exactly why they're not coming to the United States. I wonder if it is a regulatory thing, but I'm not sure.
I don't know. There are pretty strict standards in place in Europe, so
exactly.
I don't know why.
Okay. Well, maybe that's a mystery for another day. Scott, do we have anything else?
No, I think we're good. I think we've covered it. So one horsepower engine in my car? Nope, but maybe you might be able to get by in a buckboard car.
Yeah, that's true. Let us know what you think about one horsepower cars or the possibility. And go ahead and give us a shout on Facebook or Twitter. You can also find us at our astonishing website, carstuffshow.com, and send us an email directly with suggestions for future topics or a picture of your car if you put a one horsepower engine in it.
I'd love to see that.
Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.